He doesn't go in. You watch very carefully. He just stands there on the porch, at first surprised, then a little disgruntled. You can see it right there in his body language. He says three things, leaning fractionally backward in self-defense, and then the door must be closing in his face because he steps back suddenly. He looks wounded. He stands still and stares, and then turns around and walks back down the path, 20 seconds after walking up it. So what's that about? He walks around the hood of his car and opens the door, doesn't get all the way in. He sits sideways with his feet still out on the road. He leans over and picks up his radio mic, holds it in his hand for 30 seconds, looking at it, thinking. Then he puts it back. Obviously, he's not going to call it in. He's not going to tell his sergeant, "Sir, she won't let me pee anymore." So what's he going to do? Is this going to change anything? They got to Andrews by driving most of the way on the shoulder and pushing in and out of the inside lane when necessary. The base itself was an oasis of calm. Nothing much was happening. There was a helicopter in the air, but it was far enough away to be noiseless. Trent had left Reacher's name at the gate. That was clear, because the guard was expecting them. He raised the barrier and told them to park at the Marine Transport Office and inquire within. Harper put the yellow car in line with four dull olive Chevrolets and killed the motor, joined Reacher on the blacktop and followed him to the office door. A corporal stared at her and passed them to a sergeant who stared at her and passed them to a captain. The captain stared at her and told them a new transport Boeing's flight test was being rerouted to Portland instead of San Diego. He said they could hitch a ride on it. He said they would be the only passengers. Then he said takeoff was scheduled in 3 hours.
3 hours?
Reacher repeated.
Portland's a civilian airport, the captain said. It's a flight plan problem.
Reacher was silent. The guy just shrugged.
Best a colonel could do, he said.
The captain showed them to a pre-flight waiting room on the second floor. It was a utilitarian space, lit by fluorescent tubes, linoleum on the floor, plastic stacking chairs in untidy formation around low tables, old coffee rings on the tables, a trash can in the corner full of discarded cups.
It's not much, the captain said, but then it's all we got. All kinds of top brass wait in here.
Reacher thought, do they wait 3 hours? But he said nothing. Just thanked the guy and stood at the window and stared out at the runways. Nothing much was happening down there. Harper joined him for a second and then turned back and sat down in a chair.
Talk to me, she said. What is it?
Start with the motive, he said. Who's got a motive?
I don't know.
Go back to Amy Callan. Suppose she'd been the only victim. Who would you be looking at for a motive?
Her husband.
Why her husband?
Dead wife, you always look at the husband, she said. Because motives are often personal, and the closest connection to a wife is a husband.
And how would you be looking at him?
How? Same as always. We'd sweat him, sweat his alibi, keep on going until something busted open.
And he wouldn't hold up, right?
Sooner or later he'd crack.
Reacher nodded. Okay, so suppose it is Amy Callan's husband. How does he avoid getting sweated like that?
He can't avoid it.
Yes, he can. He can avoid it by going out and finding a bunch of women with some kind of a similarity with his wife and killing them, too. Doing it in some bizarre fashion that he knows is going to get everybody rushing off on some flight of fancy. In other words, he can camouflage his chosen target behind a farrago of bullshit. He can take the spotlight off of himself by burying the personal connection in a crowd. Like, where's the best place to hide a grain of sand? She nodded.
On the beach.
Right, he said.
So is it Callan's husband?
No, it isn't, he said. But?
But we only need a motive against one of the women, she said. Not all of them together. All but one are just decoys. Sand on the beach.
Camouflage, he said. Background noise.
So which one? Which one is the real target?
Reacher said nothing, moved away from the window, and sat down to wait. You wait. It's cold up there in the hills, cold and uncomfortable, crouched next to the rocks. The wind is blowing in from the west, and it's damp, but you just wait. Surveillance is important. Certainty is everything. You know that if you stay focused, you can do anything, anything at all. So you just wait. You watch the cop in his car and amuse yourself thinking about his plight. He's a few hundred feet away, but he's in a different world. You can step away from your rock and you've got a million acres of mountainside to use as a bathroom. He's down there in civilization. Streets, sidewalks, people's yards, he can't use them. He'd be arrested. He'd have to arrest himself, and he's not running the motor, so the car must be cold. Does that make it better or worse? You watch him, and you wait. The captain came back a little before the 3 hours were up. He led them downstairs and out through the same door they had used on the way in. A staff car was waiting there.
"Have a pleasant flight," he said.
The car drove them a mile around the perimeter track and then cut across toward a Boeing airliner standing alone on the apron. Fuel bowsers were disconnecting and ground crew were swarming. The plane was brand new and stark white.
"We don't paint them until we know they work right," the driver said.
There was a wheeled ladder at the forward cabin door. Flight crew in uniform clustered at the top with fat briefcases and clipboards thick with paper.
"Welcome aboard," the co-pilot said. "You should be able to find an empty seat."
There were 260 of them. It was a regular passenger plane with the fripperies stripped out. No televisions, no in-flight magazines, no stewardess call buttons, no blankets, no pillows, no headsets. The seats were all the same color. Khaki. The fabric was crisp and it smelled new. Reacher took 3 seats for himself and sat sideways, propped up against the window.
"We've done a lot of flying the last few days," he said.
Harper sat down behind him, buckled her belt.
"That's for sure," she said.
"Listen up, guys," the co-pilot called to them down the aisle. "This is a military flight, not FAA. So you get the military pre-flight announcement, okay? Which is, don't worry, because we ain't gonna crash. And if we do, you're mashed into ground beef and burned to a cinder anyway, so what's to worry about?"
Reacher smiled. Harper ignored the guy.
"So which one is the real target?" she asked again.
"You can figure it out," Reacher said.
The plane moved back and turned, headed out for the runway. A minute later, it was in the air, smooth, quiet, and powerful. Then it was over the sprawl of D.C., climbing hard. Then it was high in the cloud, settling to a westward cruise.
"The guy's still holding it in. He hasn't moved out of his car, and his car has stayed right there in front of her house." He watched his partner bring his lunch bag. There was a 20-ounce cup of coffee with it. "Poor bastard is going to be real miserable real soon. But it doesn't affect your plan. How could it? It's 2 o'clock, and time for the call."
You open the stolen mobile, dial her number, press on the little green telephone pictogram. You hear the connection go through. You hear ringtone. You crouch low in the lee of your rock, ready to speak. It's warmer down there. You're out of the wind. The ringtone continues. Is she going to answer? Maybe she won't. The type of contrary bitch who won't let her bodyguard use her bathroom might not be above ignoring her phone. You feel a momentary thrill of panic. What are you going to do? What if she doesn't pick up? She picks up.
"Hello,"
she says. She's wary, annoyed, defensive. She thinks it's the police sergeant about to complain, or the bureau coordinator or about to persuade her back into line.
"Hello, Rita," you say.
She hears your voice. You feel her relax.
"Yes,"
she says. You tell her what you want her to do.
"Not the first one," Harper said. The first one would be random, leading us away from the scent. Probably not the second, either. The second establishes the pattern.
I agree, Reacher said. Callan and Cook were background noise. They started the smokescreen.
Harper nodded, went quiet. She had moved out from behind him. Now she was sprawled across the opposite row in the empty plane. It was a weird feeling, familiar but strange. Nothing around them but neat uniform rows of vacant seats.
But he wouldn't leave it too late, Harper said. He's got a target. He'd want to hit it before anything unraveled, right?
I agree, Reacher said again.
So it's the third or the fourth?
Reacher nodded, said nothing.
But which one?
Harper asked.
What's the key?
Everything, Reacher said. Same as it always was. The clues, the geography, the paint, the lack of violence. Lunch was a cold wrinkled apple and a square Swiss cheese, which was about all her refrigerator had to offer. She served it to herself on a plate to preserve some semblance of order. Then she washed the plate and put it back in the cupboard and walked through the hallway and unlocked the front door. Stood in the cold for a second and walked down her path to the driveway. The police car was still parked right across the opening. The cop saw her coming and buzzed his passenger window down.
I came to apologize, she said.
She kept it as sweet as she could.
I shouldn't have said what I said. It's just getting to me a little is all. Of course you should come in, any time you need to.
The guy was staring at her, half puzzled, like he was thinking, women, to himself. She kept her smile going and lifted her eyebrows and tilted her head like she was reinforcing her invitation.
Well, I'll come in right now, the guy said. If you're sure it's okay.
She nodded and waited for him to get out. She noticed he left the passenger window down. The car would be cold when he got back. She led him back up the path. He was hurrying behind her. Poor guy must be desperate, she thought.
You know where it is, she said.
She waited in the hallway. He came back out of the powder room with a relieved expression on his face. She held the front door for him.
Any time, she said. Just ring on the bell.
Okay, ma'am, he said. If you're sure.
I'm sure, she said. I appreciate what you're doing for me.
What we're here for, the guy said, proud and shy.
She watched him all the way back to the car, locked the door again and stepped into the parlor. Stood and looked at the piano and decided to give it another 45 minutes, maybe an hour.
That's better. And the timing might be about right. You can't be sure. You're an expert in a lot of things, but you're not a urologist.
You watch him on the way back to the car, and you figure he's too young to be into prostate trouble, so all that's going to count is the fullness of his bladder balanced against his natural reluctance to bother her again. 2:30 now. He's bound to want to go at least twice more before 8. Probably once before, and once after she's dead.
The cloud cleared over North Dakota. The ground was visible 7 miles below them. The co-pilot wandered back into the cabin and pointed down to where he was born, a little town south of Bismarck. The Missouri River ran through it, a tiny silver thread. Then the guy wandered back again and left Reacher puzzling over navigation. He knew nothing about it. Virginia to Oregon, he'd have flown across Kentucky, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Wyoming, Idaho. He wouldn't have gone up to North Dakota. But something called Great Circle Routes made it shorter to go way out of your way. He knew that, but he didn't understand it. How could it be quicker to go way out of your way?
Lorraine Stanley stole the paint, Harper said. The lack of violence proves the guy is faking it. But what does the geography prove?
We talked about that, Reacher said.
It demonstrates scope,
he nodded.
And speed,
she nodded in turn.
And mobility, he added. Don't forget mobility.
In the end, she played for an hour and a half. The cop stayed away and she relaxed, and her touch improved until it was better than it had ever been. Her mind locked onto the notes, and she brought the speed higher and higher, right to the point where the forward motion got a little ragged. Then she backed it off and settled at a point just a little slower than the tempo was marked. But what the hell, it sounded magnificent. Maybe even better than it would played at exactly the right speed. It was involving, logical, stately. She was pleased with it. She pushed back on the stool and knit her fingers and flexed them above her head. Then she closed the keyboard lid and stood up, stepped out to the hallway and skipped up the stairs to her bathroom. Stood at the mirror and brushed her hair. Then she went back down to the coat closet and took out her jacket. It was short enough to be comfortable in the car and warm enough for the weather. She changed her shoes for her heavier pair, unlocked the door to the basement stairs and went down. Unlocked the door to the garage and used the keychain remote to open her car. The light came on inside. She switched the power on for the opener and slid into the car and started the engine while the garage door rumbled upward. She backed onto the driveway and hit the button to close the door again, twisted in her seat and saw the police cruiser parked in her way. She left the motor running and got out and walked down toward it. The cop was watching her. He buzzed the window open.
"I'm going to the store," she said.
The guy looked at her for a second, like this was outside the range of permissible scenarios.
"How long are you going to be gone?" he asked.
She shrugged.
"Half hour, an hour," she said.
"The store?" he said.
She nodded.
"I need some things."
He stared some more and arrived at a decision.
"Okay, but I wait here," he said. "We're watching the house, not you, personally. Domicile-based crimes, that's what we do."
She nodded again.
"That's fine. Nobody's going to grab me at the store."
The cop nodded back, said nothing. He started his engine and backed up the slope far enough that she could maneuver out past him. He watched her roll away down the hill, and then he eased back into position.